All right, time to talk to my special guest who's been patiently waiting in the booth with me all day today. Just a little bit of a backgrounder of what he just finished doing and came back from. On December 7th, that was the day that most of us actually listening to this program probably don't really know the significance of it. But December 7th was the day of infamy. In 1941, the Empire of Japan attacked the U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor, and that brought on World War II, or they brought Japan into World War II. Brian just came back from, I guess it could be called redemption.
Yeah, a little bit of redemption.
A little bit of redemption, because the U.S. Attacked the Japanese fleet in their home waters. And it was very similar to what happened in Pearl Harbor, but not as much fame as Pearl Harbor. And Brian went, as a diver, went to see the aftermath. So tell us all about it, Brian.
Well, thanks for having me on today, Ange.
No pleasure.
Yeah, I just got back from what's called Truk Lagoon in the island of Chuuk in Micronesia. And it's known for having this huge collection of shipwrecks in the area. And it's all a result of what was called Operation Hailstone by the U.S. Navy.
Now, how does it, in terms of the scope, how does it compare to Pearl Harbor in size, the actual aftermath?
Aftermath-wise, like, one of the things that they did is they sank a ton of ships, like much more than as Pearl Harbor was sank.
Oh, really?
But okay. Pearl Harbor, there was more dramatic battleship damage and that type of thing. In this particular case, there was a lot of support ship damage. There was some destroyers and a light carrier, and most of the fleet, they had a feeling the U.S. was in the area, so they took a lot of the big stuff out. But in the harbor, I mean, there was a total of 53 ships sunk in this raid.
Wow. That's crazy. And
I think it was like something like 250 Japanese planes and 4,500 people, Japanese sailors and that, were killed.
Wow. Massive.
And very limited losses on the U.S. side.
And this was, do you know how long after the Pearl Harbor attack?
Yeah, this took place on 2 days in February of 1944, on the 17th and 18th of February,
okay,
is when they launched this. And
okay,
it was a pretty dramatic raid, and they did one heck of a lot of bombing.
It took them almost 2 months to figure out how they could get back, obviously, right? By the sounds of it. Or a month and a half.
Not following you, sorry.
December 7th.
Well, December 7th
was Pearl Harbor.
Was Pearl Harbor, but that was 41.
Right.
Or 42, and this was in 44.
So
a couple years later. But today being December 7th, of course, is the tie-in and everything.
Yeah, I'm confused with numbers.
No, that's okay. John threw all these numbers down, but it's pretty neat. And the big thing is just the amazing amount of shipwrecks that you can dive here.
And I want to talk to you about the whole infrastructure, because it sounds like it's become quite the mecca for divers to go and spend some time from all over the world, and you met some people from different parts of the globe who all had the same interest, and it is fascinating to see. I personally have witnessed coming down on an old army vessel that's been sunk years ago. There's something that happens to you as a person when you see that just changes you, isn't it?
It's very memorable to come down and descend and suddenly see this glooming.
Yeah, this hulk of a
hulk.
And you know that it was alive at some point, you know,
yeah,
with people and activity. Brian, I want to talk to you about that and a whole lot of things here about your trip, but I do have to take a quick break, so sit tight. You've been patient.
Thank you.
Up until now, no reason to change, all right? More journal after this. When we come back, don't you dare go away. And it always reminds me of a toilet flush.
That's why I always play it, because you always
thank
mention
you
that.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590, Angela Viola, Stephen Labadie, Derek Brandeo, Jessica Ellis, and my good friend Brian Pollock on my flank from Dive Source here in Oshawa, fresh from a trip to, a trip to paradise, I guess, is now it would be considered paradise, only because it is right on the equator.
Yeah, just above the equator.
Just above the equator. But obviously it wasn't paradise back on that day in 1944. when all hell broke loose.
Yeah, and all hell, an Operation Hailstone, when they came in, it was a really unique battle in the sense that the Japanese kind of suspected something was going on, but they weren't sure. And then all of a sudden, they had this carrier task force came in and just launched, USS Enterprise was one of them, I think the Lexington, and they launched this huge attack of all these dive bombers and everything else, and they started bombing the runways, the ships. It was just a Operation Hailstone was a hellfire for these guys. It was something else.
Okay, so now bring us forward to today. What are we looking at? This is basically a theater, a war theater, where all this happened. Are they all marked? Like, is it all set up like a museum? Like, how do you access it as a diver?
As a diver, you have a couple of things. I mean, a lot of dive shops like myself will run trips to this type of thing and take you there. But if you want to go yourself, you can go a couple different ways. You can do a land-based trip where you fly to Chuuk, and then there's a couple different land-based dive shops there, and then they have boats that run you out and do diving. I did that for 3 days. And then
and you pick your dives, like you look at a map and say, okay, I want to go on that one.
Every day they had a list of what they were diving on, and you would just say, oh, I'm going to do the Hei on Maru today. And you'd get on the boat with the guide. And the nice thing is they have guides on these, and they take you down, and they tour you around the wreck.
Oh, nice.
And if there's really unique parts, the guys point them out for you. So,
nice.
You know, because one of the wrecks I dove was over 600 feet long.
Wow.
I mean, it was massive. So he's going along and pointing out all the interesting points on it. It was fascinating.
What was the highlight of your trip? What was the gem?
Well, one of the gems, there were so many gems. The biggest problem I had was keeping my regulator in my mouth because my jaw kept dropping so much. Yeah. One of the biggest gems is I got a tour on one of the engine rooms from one of the guides. And, like, I'm a certified cave diver, so the way you do this kind of thing is you run line and you go in. But I did a little bit of a trust me dive because these guys dive these engine rooms all the time, and they took me for a tour through this engine room, and I was like, it was stunning. The engine room was completely intact. You could have literally put people on the machines and everything like that. It looked perfect.
Wow.
And we swam through this thing. I did a 40-minute dive through this engine room.
Wow.
Up and down and around and back. And I came up back on the deck, and how was it, Brian? And I danced. I did a little dance, a little jig on the deck. And I'm like, oh, I'm so happy. I felt like a little kid. It was just hilarious. It was my top three dives of all time.
The things that go through your mind during an expedition like that, right? Because yes, there is the structural beauty of the moment, but there's that intangible, that thought that keeps going through your mind that there were human beings down here. There were people pushing and pulling these levers, and that part of that type of dive is just
beyond words. Yeah, and during that engine room tour, I mean, the guy shone a light over to his side, and there's a human skull there.
Yeah.
In the wreck. There are still remains in parts of these wrecks, though a few years ago, the Japanese government worked with the Chuuk government and brought the remains up and did a cremation and a Shinto ceremony to honor all the victims. So it's all treated very respectfully, but the history there is amazing. When I was over there, I was watching the miniseries Pacific just because I thought it was a great little tie-in for my head to get an idea of what these people went through.
Incredible story. So people can basically start in Toronto, let's just say, and from the time they start to the time they can access water and do a dive, how much time has gone by?
I think it was 34 hours.
Oh my God.
I had to fly. My particular path took me to Newark, New Jersey. Then I flew to Narita, Japan, and then to Guam, and then from Guam to Chuuk. And then you have your layovers in between everything. So it was a long flight. Flights.
Would you do it again?
I'm already planning it.
Oh, really?
I'm seriously thinking of going again. Everybody else who was on this trip with me, it was almost all of them was a second trip.
How about wildlife? I mean, marine life. Did you see much, or was it really just about the wrecks themselves?
Actually, it was a big combination of both. Some of the best macro photography and stuff I've done in marine life and fish everywhere. For example, a lot of the merchant marine ships had big guns on them, and you can't see it as a gun. It looks like a giant stick covered in coral.
Coral, yeah.
And it's just beautiful. And waves, literally, it was like rain of little fish flying out of your way as you swam along.
Now, is this something that you would, you know, recommend for seasoned divers, but maybe steer novice divers away from?
You have to have a certain level of competence. I would say you should be experienced, at least have an advanced certification, actually with a deep certification. Most of the average is over 100 feet. There are much deeper dives than that. The San Francisco, which is the end of the week dive a lot of the time, it's 169, 175
wow.
feet. And that really requires some mixed gas training and things. But on average, you can do a lot of dives between the 100 and 120 foot range. So in that, you know, you should have a Paddy Deep specialty or something like that to have that training. And like I was diving doubles the entire week because that's what I preferred, but there were people on the boat who were diving single tanks and doing really good dives and having a great time.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty
absolutely
awesome.
Fascinating. And, you know, we talk about these dive trips and maybe people listening think that it excludes them because diving is such a difficult thing to master. And I know for a fact, and I know you know better than I do, just how simple it is. And maybe you can just walk people in through the process, if you could, from starting at being a non-diver yep. to being able to dive on
absolutely.
The wrecks like this.
Absolutely. You should be able to swim. That's a good start.
Yeah.
Decent health overall, but you don't have to be an Olympic swimmer or anything like that. We sign you up.
I know.
Yeah, I know you told me. You hobbled through that, but you got through it.
That was the most difficult part of the whole
thing. Exactly.
Program.
Exactly. So what you do is we sign you up for a class. Now most of the theory work and that is all online. So you do this online portion. Then you come into our course. We do the little classroom review of your online stuff. Then we do the pool work. And then the final thing to get your certification is you go diving. And that's more of a reward than a test. You get to go do four dives. And our winter courses, we have a lot of people who will wait and do their dives in the spring, do the course through the winter. Or I have a family of four starting this afternoon, actually doing a private course with us, and they're taking a referral, and they're going to, I think, Cayman and doing all their open water dives there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That is absolutely the best way to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's so much motivation doing it that way.
Yeah.
Taking your open water final certification in the Bahamas or Caribbeans yeah. or like someplace like that is during winter is
it's a nice little add-on that you can do, and that's why we are so busy teaching courses over the winter as well. I tell people, like, what do you want to do in Canada in the winter if you're not snowmobiling or something like that? Why don't you get into a scuba course and have some fun and meet some new people and challenge yourself?
How much are we talking?
I think our course is $4.99.
$4.99 for...
That's the online training, the classroom, the pool, and gets you ready to go to open water, you know.
And if I was an ambitious person and wanted to book a vacation in the, I don't know, Grand Bahamas, mm-hmm. And I wanted to book that vacation for January 15th,
yep.
would it be possible for me to sort of backtrack that and
yeah,
say
absolutely.
I'm going to book my Southern Swing, mm-hmm. and now I'm going to actually do the course.
Yeah, actually, we've had
how long has it taken?
Yeah, and with the clients we had recently, we just booked their vacation for them as too, because Karen, who I store manager, is a travel agent, so
right.
she took care of that. We've got them in the course right now. I have another group in January, the first week of January, and then they're flying out for their referral and doing their dives down south. So it's all set up for them, and away they go.
I didn't know you actually did the booking for that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. One-stop shop.
Yeah, we can kind of help you all. The you know, nice thing with Karen, of course, is she's a diver, so she understands this is a good place to go diving, this place isn't. So we don't book anybody, you know, into the Gobi Desert.
Does anybody fail?
Yes, on occasion.
So really?
Yeah,
so
I mean, but there's a lot of – more of a case of somebody who signs up for a course who – couldn't swim. I had that this fall. Somebody, I told them, I said, go get some swing. Oh, yeah. And then he showed up and they couldn't do a length of the pool. And I, so they're going to do swimming lessons and come back, you know, so, but very small percentage.
Why is it so important? Because at the time that I took mine, which was years ago, I couldn't figure out, well, what's the big deal whether I can swim the length of the pool or not? I'm going to have tanks on. I mean, I'm going to be down 100 feet.
Yeah, well.
Like, what do I need to swim for?
It's just more of a comfort and confidence thing. And also, you know, what happens if you're diving off a boat in the ocean and you have to swim back to the boat, you know, and maybe the...
But I got tanks and I got masks and I got fins and
yeah,
I got all
okay,
that stuff.
Okay, but maybe the tanks are empty because you've made a boo-boo and the vest isn't floating or something like that. Or you just want to be able to swim. We want people confident. You wouldn't want to be buddied up with somebody who isn't comfortable in the water. You know?
Well, there is that.
There is that.
For sure.
Oh, I dive with you.
Yeah.
Very comfortably dive with you.
It's funny because I know you know the story. I've told it a million times. When I went for the certification and got my diving certificate and all that stuff, a couple of things happened that I wasn't even aware took place. I had an incredible fear of heights before I started diving. Like, I couldn't even go on a stepladder 2-3 feet. And through this whole process of learning to dive and jumping off the back of boats, because, I mean, think about it. For a person who's afraid of heights, whether you're jumping into air or water, you still have a big distance between you and something solid,
there's
right?
No ground.
So to me, it was like jumping off a building every time I had to jump off the back of a dive boat.
Yeah.
And by continually doing that, all of a sudden, poof, that was gone. There's a lot of phobias that you can clear up with diving. I can tell you that for sure. A lot.
We've had some people who are kind of timid about the water and the little steps. And our instructors are awesome, and they chased a little bit at a time, and they worked through some stuff. And it worked out really well.
Anyway, it's a fascinating story. Brian is going to put it up on divesource.com.
I'm also adding this to the My Outdoor Life blog.
Perfect.
Yeah,
that's going to be great. And I'm sure you've got tremendous images that the people are going to be able to check out.
That's on the fishincanada.com website, I should say.
Thank you. Why, thank you. And, of course, while you're there, go to the Mercury 9.9 contest. Get
Absolutely.
There you go.
It might be a question, too.
I love this guy. He knows the deal, right?